You're listening to the Skate Foo Podcast, episode 34. This time we're talking CO2 regulator and the delivery of CO2 into the system. Let's go.
Welcome to the Skate Foo Podcast, where it's all about learning to make aquariums beautiful. And now, here are your hosts, Skate Foo founder and chief bottle washer, Art Pinom, your DIY homescaper, JJ, and our full-time aquascaper and smarty pants from Germany, Yuri's Mitt JS.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Skate Foo Podcast, the only podcast on the internet dedicated to helping you make your aquarium beautiful. It's called Aquascaping, and we're on a mission to change the way people think about aquariums. I'm Art Pinom, and I am joined today by my co-host, JJ. JJ, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah. Yudis was not able to join us today. He's running some projects that he has to do. As most of you know, he's a professional aquascaper. So we wish him well, and I'm sure we're envying what he's doing, probably setting up one of his beautiful aquariums for somebody. So, JJ, CO2 regulators and adding CO2 to the aquarium. It's a big topic.
It's
a good topic. And you have experience on this, right?
Yeah, I've built a couple.
Okay. So I'm going to rely on you because I haven't built any. I end up buying them, but I know the one that I've bought was from Greenleaf Aquariums, and I do know they put them together, and they have a very good product. So, and I think also if you're handy and willing to go through the extra work necessary, it can probably building it yourself can probably get you a top quality regulator that's going to keep and last you a lifetime, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't even really have to be that handy because it's pretty easy to build.
Right, and there's instructions on the internet on how to get this done. But am I right?
Yeah, there's plenty.
Right, am I right in saying that there's also people on the internet that can that will build one for you?
Yeah, there are.
Okay, great. All right, so maybe we start with the basics and take it from there. We did get some questions on Facebook to a post that Yudis put up on our page, and I appreciate everybody who answered. Matt, Nathan, Abhishek, sorry if I got that name wrong. Victor even chimed in, Victor Lanto. So I appreciate that, folks. We'll try and get to your questions here at the end of the show. So let's start with the basics. At the end of the day, we're talking about CO2 that's sitting in a cylinder, whether that cylinder is a CO2 cylinder, a paintball cylinder, a 2-liter bottle of soda, or some other form. We're trying to get that CO2 into the aquarium, and we need to regulate it, right? So it needs to turn on and off, theoretically. It has to be delivered at a right pressure so that it diffuses as best it can into the water. There's multiple parts to this. There's the cylinder itself. So as I just mentioned, the various types of cylinders. There's the regulator that regulates the pressure that's inside of the cylinder into a pressure that's usable for us to diffuse the CO2 into the water. Depending on the system, if you have a higher tech system, there's typically a bubble counter. And I guess the bubble counter you can use in any system. There's the needle valve to allow you to adjust the bubbles. There's a solenoid, which turns it on and off, right?
Yes.
If it's the automated type. Then there's the CO2 tubing. And again, I recommend CO2 tubing. Do not use your everyday silicone tubing that you can purchase at your local pet store. It will work for a while, but it has the possibility of, number one, kinking and causing some back pressure. Number two, degrading with the CO2 over time.
Yeah.
So I strongly recommend CO2 tubing, which you can purchase online. And that's delivered into then a diffuser, typically. And that end of the process, the diffusing end, we'll cover in another episode, because there's a lot of option as to how you're diffusing CO2 into the water. Okay. Here we're focusing on the other end of that process, which is how are we delivering the CO2? Okay. So that's what we're talking about. And the basic pieces of a CO2 regulator, if you're starting to think about upgrading to a regulator, you'll either be having a paintball cylinder or you'll have a CO2 cylinder. And this regulator goes attached to that. JJ, when people start to look at and research what regulator should I buy, there's some things to consider, right?
Yeah.
So obviously the cost, but then they'll quickly find that there's a single stage and a dual stage regulator.
Yeah.
Can you shed some light on that?
I won't be able to be in technical terms, but very layman terms.
Yeah, let's keep it layman's terms, because there are forums out there, particularly the Bar Report, that focuses in on that. And if you want technical details, that's the best place to go and get them. And obviously online and other sites where there's manufacturers of regulators, they can get into the science and a lot of detail there. But let's keep it high level in layman's terms.
So a single stage, it's exactly what it says. It's a single stage. It has one diaphragm. It allows one flow of pressure. So when you're adjusting you have a working pressure and the pressure of the tank, right? That the CO2 tank. So the single stage, it only allows the, it's not as precise as, like, say, a dual stage regulator. Dual stage has two stages, and it's more, you can set it to, say, you know, at 40 PSI. And what that does, that gives you a little bit more pressure on the backside that you can push out and get, you know, it's for someone like if you're using an inline CO2 diffuser, you know, like the Tomix, you need one with like 40 PSI. And that's where dual stage comes in. Single stage, you won't be able to get it that high. It's not that you can't get it that high, it just won't stay consistent. It's not as consistent flow as, say, a dual stage is more precise. So that, I mean, I've used single stages in the past, and I've gassed a couple tanks when it runs out, because it dumps all the CO2 into the tank, whereas a dual stage, once it gets low, it just shuts off.
Okay. Let's address that, because I think you've covered a lot there. And I tend to be simplistic about things. The single stage, first, you typically recognize them by having only one gauge that you're looking at. And the dual stage, you typically see two gauges, right?
No, that's not true.
Ah, there you go. Why is that not true?
They both have dual gauges. One just shows the pressure that's inside the tank, the CO2 tank, and the other one just shows the working pressure.
Right. So are you saying it's a misconception to merely go by the number of gauges?
It's a misconception.
Okay. So I've seen single stages that have one gauge, and I've seen single stages that have two gauges. And I won't mention names, but the site selling it sells it a single stage with the name Dual Gauge.
As opposed to, it's a misconception.
Right. So
that one gauge, it's either it can only be one of two things. It's either showing the internal working pressure, which is from the CO2 tank, or it shows the outlet working pressure, which is the pressure that's going into the tank, to the fish tank.
So one point to be aware when you're looking for regulators is we're really talking about a two-stage or a single stage, dual stage or single stage regulator. Make sure that you are very clear from whoever you're buying it from what you're getting, okay? Not necessarily tied to the number of gauges on the regulator, okay?
Yeah.
Now, a dual stage can have, and normally will have, two gauges. One is looking at the pressure inside the cylinder, right?
Yes.
And then the other one is your outlet
pressure. Yes.
Now, you mentioned something very important, and I'll be right up front with everybody. I always recommend a dual stage regulator to people to avoid the potential for the almost empty tank dump, which you said gassed your aquarium. I, too, have been a mass murderer of fish and shrimp until I learned this. What ends up happening, do you want to talk about the dump and explain what that is?
So what happens is, when your cylinder gets low, a single stage, there's not that extra valve to shut off, so it pushes all the CO2 out of your out through the regulator into your fish tank. And what that mean that everybody knows it uses CO2, it significantly drops your pH, makes it acidic, low oxygen, and fish suffocate.
Exactly. So as the tank gets to the point where it's almost empty, it just dumps out everything else it's got, you know.
Exactly.
It's all at once. And there's the potential to gas your tank because the CO2 just skyrockets, the pH drops.
Yeah.
Obviously fish, shrimp are sensitive to this and can be negatively impacted. And like I said, I'm embarrassed to say that I learned the hard way.
Yeah, I've done that too. Yeah. No, I'm not opposed to, you know, using single stage regulators. You just have to be, you know, diligent and check, you know, make sure you're checking if it's getting low or not. And if, you know, for me, if it's around the 200 or 300 PSI on a single stage, it's probably time to go refill it.
And I respect that. Everybody makes their own decisions. And if you're diligent at doing that, there's absolutely no problems. There are benefits to the single stage. Normally, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Depending on materials. It's a good regulator. It has its uses. But if you're anything like me, where I get busy and I may not be able to look at it.
Forget. Yeah.
Or I forget, or I don't want to have to worry about it, save up a little more and get yourself a dual stage.
And for me, one of the other big differences between the two is if anybody's ever had a single stage, you know that when you're changing the tank, you have to release the internal pressure of the regulator. Otherwise, you'll blow your diaphragm and then you have to replace the whole diaphragm, or just you might just be cheaper off buying a brand new one or more bang for the buck anyway. But with the dual stage, you set it to the outlet working pressure that you want, and you leave it. You can change the CO2 tank on it, the cylinder, and not have to worry about adjusting it every single time. You know, you set it to where you want it and you forget it.
From my side, buy a dual stage, folks.
Yeah.
Too many things that can go
wrong. No, I definitely recommend the dual stage.
Yeah. Now, JJ, does it matter what materials the regulator is made of? I've noticed that there's brass, there's stainless steel.
No.
Okay.
It's just the aesthetics.
Right. And I've also, in certain sites will list them as high purity, standard, etc. For our use, I don't think you need to go with a high purity regulator. Remember, these regulators are built for scientific labs and conditions that require absolute purity because you're measuring this gas or that gas, etc. We don't need to be that precise for aquariums. What are your thoughts?
I've never really looked into that. Never heard of that. So, the regulators, I buy used regulators on eBay and just have them rebuilt the insides. It's much cheaper than buying a brand new regulator.
There you go.
Both of my regulators I built, they were Exenolin regulators, and I just had to change the CGA, which on CO2 is the CGA 320.
Okay, I didn't understand anything that you just said.
CGA is that little that bar that comes out of the side of the regulator and it attaches to the cylinder.
Ah, okay, yes.
It has the nut on it. That's the CGA.
Right. Now, you normally have a gasket that goes in between the regulator and the tank, right?
Yeah, you can use the little plastic washer or all my tanks are PermaSeal.
Okay.
Which it just threads into the inside of the CGA, and it has a little rubber gasket which creates the airtight seal against the cylinder every time.
But if you don't have that, you really are risking a leak, right?
Oh, if you don't have that, you'll run out of CO2 within a day.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
I get a lot of questions about that, and that's one of my first questions I give them back. Do you have the seal on?
Yeah, matter of fact, when we were at the aquatic experience, we got up there and they told us to bring our regulators, that they would have tanks for us, but they didn't get washers.
Oh, boy.
So we were all scrambling trying to find CO2 washers.
All right, so you can get, like cars, really crazy here with regulators. And I know that there's people that are really into them, and there's some beautiful, beautiful ones.
Yeah.
Chrome, stainless steel, brass, etc.
Yeah.
I think unless you have a transparent cabinet.
Yeah, that's the only difference is, you know, really.
Yeah. And you know, some people do mod out their cabinets and their equipment inside. We're actually going to do a show on that. But if nobody's going to see it, folks, it can be ugly. Doesn't have
brass,
to be,
yeah.
Doesn't have to be beautiful. At least the inside, anyway. If it performs well, so think about what you want it for and your budget, and go from there. Now, needle valve—that's a component of the regulator that's added. What does the needle valve do?
That allows you to adjust the flow rate from the regulator into the. Let me go back. So you have the two working pressures. You have the internal pressure of the cylinder, then you have the outlet pressure of the regulator. So that comes out into the CO2 tubing that goes into your fish tank. Well, you need something to regulate that flow as well, and that's what the needle valve does. It allows you to regulate the flow.
Now, for me, I want to spend money on the needle valve and make sure that it's one that is I can have fine level control and that will stay consistent, will not drift.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
The only ones I've used and that are highly recommended are the idle needle valves. They're handcrafted, USA made. Yeah, they're a little expensive, but they have a rating of like 3,000 or 4,000 PSI, which we'll never even touch. And, they're handmade, you know, they're not mass produced. So, you know, that they've been fine tuned and scrutinized before they go out, you know, for sale. And this company has nothing but good reviews. So, you know, everybody that I've learned to build regulators from, that's who they've used. So, yeah, they do a great job. But there's also Clippards, I think. I think I want to say Clippards. Swagalock also makes a pretty good one. And they come with the you know, you'll see some with the Variner handles, which is the little knob that allows you to turn it or tune it in. And they have the little lines that allows you to basically mark where you're at in your CO2 adjustment. So if you went two clicks for more CO2 and that's too much, you want to go less, you can just click it back one dial and you know where you're at.
Exactly.
I personally have one with the Variner, one without, and I honestly never pay attention to the Variner.
you're just looking at the
I watch the bubbles.
Right. Okay. Well, I think if you are looking at a regulator that is inexpensive, be careful, because sometimes manufacturers really skimp on the needle valve side of things.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, and you're going to regret it later. When you set a bubble count of 2 bubbles per second and that thing is drifting on you every other day to 2.5, 3, or the other way, and you got to keep adjusting.
Yeah.
It's not worth the aggravation and frustration, okay? And obviously negative impact to your aquarium. So make sure that there's a good needle valve there. Make sure that it's useful, as JJ just mentioned, something that allows you to easily fine-tune it, because this is really what's going to be creating the bubbles and the discharge rate for you, okay?
Exactly.
Now, I want to get into the solenoid and explain what that is, but there's other pieces to the regulator that we haven't covered, such as the safety valve, et cetera, which are really beyond the scope of what we're talking here today. But make sure, and as you're researching, you'll see that these regulators really are complex, sophisticated pieces of equipment, well worth it in spending your hard-earned dollars to purchase a good one.
Hey, Art, yes. May I just touch on that real fast?
Sure, go for it.
You mentioned the safety valve. Dual-stage regulators have them. Single-stages will not.
Buy dual-stage, folks.
The dual-stage, what happens is if you blow a diaphragm, instead of that CO2 getting shot into your tank, it goes straight through the release valve. I know, I've done it.
So, there's more to it, and safety valve is an important one. Solenoid, JJ, what is that?
It's just an electronic device that has a gate on it. That's all it is.
On and off switch.
You plug it into a timer, or, you know, for those who like to use pH meters, which we'll touch. I don't think they're necessary. We'll touch on that in a minute.
Yep.
You plug it into your timer. When the timer comes on, it opens the gate. When the timer goes off, it closes the gate. Now, building your own regulators, you have to be careful with using Teflon tape or the liquid Teflon that you can paste on there, allowing this stuff to get in there, because it will block the gate and you'll still get seepage. So I've done that as well. So I've had to dismantle a whole solenoid just to clear it of Teflon tape.
Right. That's a good tip. Actually, I've done that as well. So essentially, it's just the on and off switch that's controlled by something, depending on which way you want to go with your system, your setup. Okay. So this is important because it will stop the flow of CO2 into your aquarium. And if you've built your system correctly, you're not going to get this back pressure that will create problems. So essentially, these are the major pieces, components of a regulator setup for the delivery of CO2 into the aquarium. JJ, did we miss any piece?
You're talking about the components to it?
Yes.
Are we going into bubble counter?
Ah, I forgot the bubble counter. Very good. The bubble counter is something I still use today, and that's what I use to eyeball the CO2, at least initially. There's many types. There's some that come that you can affix to the regulator body itself on the outflow. There's some that you can connect to the tubing itself as opposed to the regulator. And ADA, for example, has these glass bubble counters that you put in line with the CO2 tubing. And you fill them up with water or some other sort of viscous liquid that will not evaporate so fast. But what are your thoughts on bubble counters?
I like them. Just for the fact, I like them on my regulator. That way, when I'm sitting there and fine tuning, you know, playing with my needle valve, I can sit there and look. It's right there. I can look right at it.
Right.
Another important factor to bubble counters is that sometimes they tend to leak. It is imperative to protect your needle valve and your solenoid to have a high-grade check valve underneath it.
That's also a great tip. So you got water in this, typically, in this bubble counter. And if you do not have that check valve, you are...
Water evaporates.
Okay. It does.
I wouldn't use water. You can use like mineral oil or something.
Right.
Well, that was water great. Evaporates.
Right. That's where I was going. But... If you have water, or I guess any liquid, with the potential backflow, you can ruin
exactly.
other components. So having a good check valve there is important. Absolutely right.
On my regulators, all my post body parts, apart from the regulator, apart from the needle valve, the solenoid, and the bubble counter, they're all Swagalock.
Okay.
And that's a good company. They, you know, you have to order through them. You can't go to a store usually and buy straight. You have to go online and create an order through their company itself. But their check valve is really good. You know, it's a little, you know, it's expensive, but you know, when I say expensive, it's like $25, but it's worth every penny.
For the safety.
For the safety of your regulator. Exactly.
Now you mentioned don't use water. I use water because I'm old school, but you're absolutely right. Water evaporates, and every water change, I need to refill that puppy.
Yep.
You use what?
Mineral oil.
Mineral oil. And with mineral oil, do you have any issues with the bubbles themselves?
Nope, it works. It works the same.
Okay.
Just doesn't evaporate.
Right. Right. And I know that they also sell commercially some sort of oil. I don't know if it's mineral.
Yeah. Orlando over at Greenlee sells a little tube. I don't know what you call it. It's like a little jar of it.
Okay.
Container of it.
Right. So if you don't want the aggravation of having to refill that constantly, don't go with water. Go with something else. So I prefer my bubble counter on the regulator itself. That way, as I'm fine-tuning the needle, it's right there in front of me. If I would have it in line, as I've had it in the past, then I need to be adjusting the needle valve, then getting up, looking at the bubble counter, then going back, and then looking at the bubble counter again.
And honestly, also, for me, I'm terrible with glassware. I seem to break every freaking thing of glass that I get. So that's just another, for me, it's just another safety valve. I mean, safety feature for me. It's there, it's attached, it's fixed, it's made of, you know, brass or whatever it's made with, and it's solid. It's not going to break if I try to replace, you know, move the tubing on it or anything like that, you know?
So while we're on it, this is Nathan's question, bubble counter or no bubble counter? I'm with bubble counter. How about you?
I'm with bubble counter, but it's not a necessity. Because at the, you know, you think about it, you can take your if you have a dual stage regulator, single stage, I would totally go with a bubble counter. With a dual stage is not necessary because again, you can set your working pressure, then you can fine tune your needle valve to where you want it. Then you just take your tube and stick it into a glass of water and then fine tune your bubble flow, and you're set. You can't, but you can't do that with a single stage.
Right. Too much work for me. I just want the bubble counter there. If I ever need to adjust, it's right there. I don't have to go through the process of trying to figure out, you know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be objective.
No, I know. So I think we're both on the bubble counter.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm on the bubble counter.
But can you do it without? Yes, of course.
Yes, you can.
All right. So from my side, that's how I think about regulators. I think they're a critical component to CO2 delivery. I think it's an area where you should save up and spend your money on quality. And I think you need to do your homework. Any other thoughts before we get into answering the questions from Facebook?
I'm trying to think. No, not really. We went over everything. I mean, I'll send you some links from the Bar Report. You know, if you're a member of the Bar Report, you'll be able to see the builds.
Okay.
You know,
we'll add them to the show notes then. It's and show notes can be found at scapefood.com/34, the number of the episode. All right, let's get into the questions we got on Facebook. And we've answered Nathan's question, which was related to bubble counter. Matt has a question, a few questions. And his first question is, should I not run CO2 at night?
No.
Okay.
Don't run it.
Okay. I think the general answer is exactly that. Remember what we're trying to do. We are providing CO2 carbon into the aquarium for the plants to use during photosynthesis. This is when they take up carbon dioxide. When there is no light, when the photo period is over, plants stop taking in carbon dioxide and they breathe, just like you and me, oxygen.
Yeah, they sleep at night too, folks.
Yeah. So they stop. So if you continue to add CO2, you have the chance of decreasing pH to dangerous levels because that'll continue to drop. And now you have plants not taking it up, so it'll be more available.
Now, if you're on a pH meter and you're looking for a specific pH, you know, like Victor said with shrimp, then yeah, you can do it totally. If you're looking for, say, that 6.0, but you just make sure that your pH meter is constantly calibrated and working order. So yeah, you technically can if you want to hit that specific pH mark. But for general purposes, for just plants, no.
Careful with oxygen levels if you're doing that. They can and will drop dangerously low overnight. Matt has another question that is tied to this, which is pH meter or timer. Okay. Let me give some background. When I started in the hobby, inspired by a company called Dupla, they had this amazing pH-controlled system. And there's this chart that you may have seen. We'll link to it in the show notes. I may have a picture of it, and I'll put it there, which is the KH, pH, CO2 chart. And for what it says is basically at a certain pH and at a certain KH, you look at the graph, and it'll tell you how much CO2 is in the water. And there's a green diagonal line across the chart, which is where you want to be, given your pH and KH. And to the bottom of that is yellow, to the top of that is red. So too little CO2, too much CO2. And again, this is looking for our plants. You know, what are we trying to keep? I typically try and keep somewhere between 25 to 30 ppm. I don't know about you, JJ. So what this company did, and the concept behind a pH controller for your CO2 delivery, is that it says, it assumes that your KH is fixed. Therefore, by measuring pH of the water through this pH meter, it can hit a certain CO2 target. So I used to set it to 6.8 pH, and then it would measure the pH and deliver CO2 until that pH was reached via the meter, and then it turned off. And I would not shut that off at night. It would run 24/7, keeping the pH at 6.8. Okay. The problem with this, and why it is less and less used today, except for situations as the one you just mentioned, JJ, that Victor Lantos mentioned, that they're trying to keep a certain pH because of the Taiwan bees shrimp that they're keeping in the aquarium. The problem with the chart is that in an aquarium setting, it doesn't work well because other factors come into play besides CO2, KH, and the pH. Other factors influence pH, such as phosphates. And tannins and numerous things. So not getting into the science of it, the chart isn't reliable to hit a CO2 number in an aquarium setting, especially one where we're fertilizing our plants. Therefore, you may be delivering too much CO2, too little CO2, you don't know, and you run into problems. So pH meters are expensive. Controllers, pH controllers are expensive. So if it's not going to be accurate and can give you problems, why use it?
Yep.
So the answer from my point of view, Matt, is timer, not pH controller, unless you have a very specialized reason to use and care about what your pH is at.
Agreed.
Okay. So my method, I start my timer. My timer turns on that solenoid about an hour before the lights come on.
Yeah.
And then it shuts off the CO2 about an hour before they come off. The thinking here is that I am
saturating the water column.
Exactly. When the lights come on, so that the plants have enough CO2 in the water to pull. When lights are on and they start to photosynthesize. And at about an hour before the lights come off, I've fully saturated those plants with their needs. If you listen to the Ask Art episode that I did, I believe is episode number 2 on light levels, you'll see that plants have a requirement that they need to fill every day. And by about 1 hour to go on lighting, they've already filled it. So I turn off the CO2 and allow that to taper off into the darkness, okay? So that's my method. JJ, you got any particular method?
I like to run the timer. Like you said, I usually start about an hour before. And like you said, turn it. I have on my big tank, I have a T5. It has 2 timers on it. So I have 2 bulbs that come on first, and they're on for a couple hours before the other one, the main burst comes on. So I have the CO2 rigged up with those, with the first 2. So they come on, it's not a lot of light, you know, and it still gives enough, you know, as the CO2 is pumping in. So when the other 4 pop on, there's plenty of CO2 there for the plants to burn off. So I turn them off the same in the verse when when the main four go off, the CO2 shuts off. But everything else, I try to turn it on an hour before lights on and then an hour before lights off.
So it's similar to my method then.
Very similar, yes.
So really, folks, instead of the pH controller, the drop checker is what's used.
Which is inconsistent, in my opinion.
Okay. Why?
Well, think about it. If you have a really big tank and you have one little bitty drop checker in the corner on one side, it's not the CO2 concentration is not going to be as high on that side. Or, you know, well, let me rephrase that. Depending on which side the CO2 is coming in from, and your drop check, say you have your drop checker next to your CO2 on the far side, on the one side, but on the other end, your CO2 concentration is not going to be as high.
JJ, I get it, and that is a common issue. You're absolutely right. I would tell you a couple of things that you're bringing up. One is the placement of the drop checker, and maybe even the use of two.
Or three.
Or three, depending on the size of your aquarium. And also water column flow.
Yes.
I place mine, and we're straying off here a little bit, but I place mine at the bottom to make sure that I'm checking the CO2 levels at the lower levels of the aquarium. I put it directly opposite of where my CO2 is inputting. And I have I'm going to say it's a power head, but it's not. It's one of those power heads that moves a lot of water, but it's not a jet stream. Okay. I'm forgetting the name right now. Ecotech Marine does them. And what it does is really moves a lot of water in terms of volume, but there isn't a jet, you know, bending over my plants coming out of it. Okay. It's kind of a propeller type system. This makes sure that my water column is moving very well, and therefore CO2 is getting diffused at all levels. So by measuring where I think it will be least at the bottom, I'm sure to be providing at least enough for everybody, or all the plants, I mean. So anyway, and just very quickly, the reason why I like the drop checker is because that CO2 chart that we talked about before works with the bubble counter. I'm sorry, with the drop checker. Because the drop checker creates this barrier of air between the pH solution and the water column. The only thing getting through that, one of the only things getting through that air barrier is CO2, therefore reacting with that internal solution, therefore giving you an accurate picture, or as accurate as it can be. It's not an actual number. Remember, folks, it's not a number we're after. We're looking for a range. So if you're in that green range, you're good. Okay.
What kind of solution do you use in your bubble? Your drop checker.
Yeah, you know me. I make it easy on myself. It's a combined solution. What's typically in that bubble counter is a solution of water that's KH4, so a standardized solution. And then I always forget how to pronounce it. Bromethyl blue, which is the pH test. You've all seen it. You've all used it, I'm sure. It's blue and changes color based on pH. So a few drops of that go in there. Or if you're lazy like me, you just buy the combined thing and just drop it into your drop checker and you're good. I don't have to worry about combining things. And it will turn different colors, right? Blue too little, yellow too much, green just right. I keep it towards the green-yellow side. For me, and it works. And looking at the drop checker, looking at my bubbles per second, and then looking at my inhabitants, taking all of that data in, adding experience on top of that, that's how I run my CO2. So let's talk about a couple of more questions here, or three more questions. One is, what is a Sergas reactor and should I use one? By Matt. JJ, do you know what a Sergas reactor is?
Yeah, it's like it's basically a reservoir. It's like a water, you know, you go to Home Depot and you get like a water purification system for your under your sink or whatever. Basically what happens is the CO2 goes into that water column there that's in that reactor, and it sits there as it stores, it dissolves into the water. And the theory it's proven now. The longer it sits there, it dissolved and it goes into your tank, and you have a higher dissolved rate of CO2 going into your tank of CO2.
Okay. Yeah, I think the concept here, folks, is we need to get CO2 diffused into the water. So what's the most efficient way to diffuse CO2 into the water? And there's many, many ways of doing it. That's why I want to push it off into another podcast, because I really think it deserves more thought, deeper discussion. But dwell time, the amount of time that you allow a CO2 bubble to be in contact with the water, the more chances of that CO2 diffusing into the water column. So the Sergas reactor is exactly that. It's a CO2 reactor. One build of it. There used to be the Rex Grigg reactor. Remember that one?
Yeah.
There's the Tom Barr Venturi reactor that uses the Venturi suction of a power head, almost recirculating to get, again, more dwell time. There's Bell, there's ceramic diffusers, there's true Venturi injection into water, which actually a study I just recently saw said that the Venturi, not necessarily the Tom Barr version, but it's a Mazai tube.
Is that the one that gets narrow in the middle?
Exactly. And it creates a very high pressure, and the pressure diffuses the CO2 more efficiently into the water than the ceramic diffuser. Actually, this study showed that it was 100 times more efficient.
But, wow.
You know, it gets to a point, folks, where, you know, it's overkill, diminishing returns for our purposes. So we're going to dedicate a whole segment on this, and we will include how to clean them. So Abhishek, who said, give us some tips on keeping the diffuser white and algae-free. That's tough. I think just
you have to take it out and soak it in bleach water.
Exactly.
Only way to do it.
diluted bleach. The tip is buy a couple.
And, yeah.
I put one in, I take the dirty one out, I clean it, I dry it. It's ready for when I go back the next time and swap them.
Yep.
Even low algae tanks will start to gather grime, algae, other things in there that are just going to clog it. So, but be careful what you put it in. If you put it in and it's a diluted bleach solution, and I put it into dechlorinator afterwards just to make sure
there's any
bleach. Okay.
Yep.
Lastly, citric acid by Matt. We've been talking about pressurized CO2 coming from a cylinder, like a paintball or a true CO2 cylinder. But there's these other cylinders that consist of plastic bottles and traditionally yeast, right?
Yes.
There's this other version that, in my mind, sits somewhere between the yeast and the pressurized automated system, which is this citric acid version. Are you familiar with it?
Not at all.
Okay. If you, I don't know about everybody around the world, but in the United States, it's common to have a science project in your school years where you have this volcano effect. You put baking soda in a glass, and you put in some citric acid into it, and it creates this huge fizzing and bubbling out like if it's lava flowing. I remember doing that in my elementary years. This is the same concept, combining citric acid with baking soda. One of the outputs is CO2. So there is a product out there, I think it's mostly on eBay, pretty cool, where you screw into it. It looks like a square tubing with some regulator components to it, no gauges. But there's a pressure valve, safety valve, release valve. And you screw the two bottles. One of the bottles is full of water and baking soda. The other bottle is full of, or contains, water and citric acid. And what you end up doing is you squeeze the citric acid side of the bottle, and that creates this flow of citric acid and water over to the baking soda side. It drips in there, creating CO2, and that outflow outflows into your tank. And it, due to the pressure variance between the two, as the CO2 comes out of the baking soda bottle into the aquarium, the pressure drops, and this drop in pressure creates more citric acid coming from the other side, dripping in, creating more CO2, and keeps it going. So the theory is that this is more stable, a delivery mechanism, than the yeast. Okay? I'll have a link to a good explanation and review of this mechanism in the show notes. Again, scapefood.com/34. What can I say? It's a do-it-yourself CO2 delivery system. There are some improvements to the yeast. Typically, because of the release valve, the risk of having these unfortunate back pressure explosions that sometimes you get with yeast should not be there. There is, apparently from the reviews, a dropping of pressure of CO2, of bubble count, and then coming back up, so you get this fluctuation. But overall, it seems to be more stable. From my side, if you have no other option and you're just considering yeast or citric acid, I would tell you explore citric acid. It does seem to have some improvements. Again, follow the links that I'll have in the show notes. But comparing yeast, citric acid, and the pressurized CO2 mechanism, I would tell you save up, definitely spend the money on the pressurized CO2. You will be, I think, much happier with it. So that's the thinking. So, JJ, any final thoughts before we close the episode?
Yeah, just like another podcast I said before, you know, do your research. You don't have to go buy a pre-built one, you know, that's, yeah, they're all got all the bells and whistles on it, but you can honestly build a really nice regulator with all the bells and whistles, super cheap. You know, if you guys want to do that, hit me up on Facebook. I'll be more than happy to help you. You can build one for half the cost that what you would buy one on eBay or from somebody on the forums. And, you know, it's a learning experience. You get to see how to build it, how it works. So you get to learn something as well. And you, not only that, you get quality components because you're doing it yourself. So you're spending the money on that as opposed to the labor part.
Right. Well, great advice. I echo that. It's definitely worth it to try and stretch and get it done. So let's close, huh?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you found this episode entertaining and valuable to you. We care about you and your personal aquascaping journey. Please let us know what you're struggling with and how we can help. You can reach all three of us by sending an email to feedback@scapefoo.com. If you want to reach us individually, of course you can. You can reach me at art@scapefoo.com. JJ is at jj@scapefoo.com. And Yudis is at js@scapefoo.com. Lastly, if you haven't done it already, please subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast so you will get each episode delivered to you automatically. If you use iTunes, click on the iTunes link in the show notes. If you don't, please subscribe via the Stitcher link in the show notes. And again, the show notes are at scapefoo.com/34. I do want to put a final plug in for the new podcast that I have put out. It's the Ask Art podcast. You can find it at askart.help, H-E-L-P, and Ask Art is one word. It is taking the place of the old Skate Fru Wednesday pro tip that we had here. And what we are doing is taking your voicemail questions. You can leave them directly from your computer or your phone simply by going to askart.help. And if I play it on the air, I send you a t-shirt as a thank you for helping the community learn. It's a quick show. I'm having a ton of fun doing it. And I answer directly the question that you have, as opposed to you having to wade through a ton of forum posts to try and figure it out. So if you haven't already, go have a listen, askart.help. Please, if you have any aquarium-related question, go ahead and submit it. I'd love to send you a t-shirt and give you a direct answer. Already three people have, and more people are leaving questions as well. So thank you. JJ, with that, man, good to talk to you as usual.
Yes, sir.
All right, everyone, have a wonderful week. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Scape Fu Podcast, where it's all about learning to make aquariums beautiful.